Job chapter 2, I'll start in verse 1. I'm going to read down to verse number 10. If you'll follow along, I'll read out loud. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From whence comest thou?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now, and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in thy hand, but save his life." So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord, and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown, top of the crown of his head. And he took him a potsherd, Job did, to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, now what do you think she's going to say? "Oh, what a wonderful husband you are. Boy, I'm praying for you. Man, you're just so faithful." Here's what she says in all of her encouragement. "Dost thou still retain thy integrity? Curse God and die." But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips." And I should be fair to her, because that's really not fair, I guess, to pick on her that way. But she had lost her kids as well. I mean, she had lost her wealth. She had lost her possessions. I mean, her life is tied in with him, and with all that's happened to him, you know, she was obviously very discouraged as well. But notice what it says in verse 9. She says, "Dost thou still retain thy integrity?" And that's what we're going to be kind of talking about, this idea of integrity here in just a moment. Now, if you bear with me, we'll kind of go off road, kind of go down some little trails here, and then we'll come back to Job here in a little bit. Most likely over the next few days, this being January 30th now, the next couple of days, if this already hasn't happened, it will be happening. A lot of resolutions will be made. I guess we could, if we wanted to, go around and just ask, you know, if you have you made, I'm not going to do that, so I'm not putting you on the spot in case you, "Oh, I got to think of one real fast." But probably you've made some resolutions or thought about it at least, or, you know, probably thought about next year, maybe some goals. We don't always call them resolutions, but we have some goals, some dreams, some thoughts, maybe some things we'd like to do, some things we'd like to accomplish. And I think, generally speaking, having and making resolutions are a good idea. And it doesn't have to be just January 1st. I mean, you can do it any time during the year. I think it's good to have some goals for the year, some dreams, some ideas, some things you want to try to accomplish. There's a couple of famous quotes about this idea of making resolutions. One of the most famous is probably Benjamin Franklin. He said this, "Be at war with your vices, at peace with your neighbors, and let every new year find you a better man." That's a good quote, isn't it? Be at war with your vices, at peace with your neighbors, and let every new year find you a better man. Now, I saw this one. I don't know who this guy is. His name is Carl Bard. I have no idea who it is, but it's an interesting quote. He said this. Now, think about this. "Although no one can go back and make a brand new start." In other words, you can't change history. "Although no one can go back and make a brand new start." Now, listen to this. "Anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending." Isn't that good? You can't make a brand new start again, but you can make a brand new ending. You can say, okay, my ending, the way I'm looking at it, is not what I want, so I'm going to do some things different to have a different ending. And I think that's an encouraging way to look at it. Now, when we think about New Year's resolutions, now bear with me, I'm going to just talk a little bit, again, trying to get us into a mindset. When you think about New Year's resolutions, there's two things that jump out. Number one is this. The most common resolution, what do you think it is? Weight loss. That is probably every year the most common resolution. People say, "I'm going to lose weight this year." That just is the most common. And as Americans, that's probably a good resolution. Now, here's the second thing about New Year's resolution. The most common is losing weight. The second thing about New Year's resolution is the outcome. We call this the Cleveland Brown syndrome. We start out with high hopes, and we end up with bitter disappointments. And somewhere by end of January, we say, "Well, wait till next year." That's the Cleveland Browns rallying cry. And so that's kind of the outcome of resolutions. We always start out and say, this year I'm going to do this, and I'm going to start here. Maybe I'm going to read my Bible through. I'm going to pray every day. I'm going to go soul winning every week. I'm going to, whatever that resolution may be. And then somewhere along the year, we kind of get off track, and then about halfway through the year, we say, boy, you know, what happened? I had such high hopes, and kind of crash and burn. Now, here's what we're going to do just to start with so you understand, because I don't want you to think that this is a weight loss lesson, because it's not, but it's going to kind of almost start that way when you listen to it. We're going to kind of use what we call a parable teaching method. We're going to take a physical lesson, kind of look at it and come to different angles, and then from that, we're going to springboard into a spiritual truth, kind of like a parable. So we're going to use this idea of New Year's resolution, and probably the most common, the number one resolution is said in America, New Year's Day, is losing weight. That's the most common one. And we're going to talk tonight about this, a better resolution. That's the most common one, but we're going to springboard into a better resolution here in just a few moments. Now, bear with me. Let me just kind of talk along this line, this physical lesson, and I think we'll get to some spiritual application here rather soon. When you think about resolutions, there are two different types of resolutions. There is what we call achievement resolutions and process resolutions. Now, don't lose me in the wording, okay? Because there's a reason we're going. It's not just to fill up clock time. There's achievement resolutions, and then there's process revolutions. Now, what is the difference? Well, achievement resolutions, that's what we're going to look at just for a second, are usually a specific type of accomplishment. So again, we'll talk about weight loss just for a second. So if we're thinking, again, this New Year's, the most common New Year's resolution, losing weight, that's the most common. So if it was an achievement resolution, it would be, I'm going to lose, let's say, 10 pounds. So this year, I want to lose 10 pounds. That's usually pretty doable for most people. I'm going to lose 10 pounds this week. That's an achievement resolution. It is a specific accomplishment. Now, here's what you find about achievement resolutions. They can be short-lived. What happens after you lose 10 pounds? You gain 15. That's the problem. So they're short-lived, and here's the other thing about them. They're affected by uncontrollable circumstance. Again, we'll use weight loss as an illustration. A lot of things can affect your weight loss. Okay, here's your goal. I'm going to do this year. Here's my achievement resolution. I'm losing 10 pounds this year. Well, here's what could happen. Illness can change it. Some people gain weight. Some people lose weight over illness. But if you are ill, then you're usually off diet because of the illness. What else can mess up things you can't control? Well, in a way you control it, but in a way you can't. Vacations. I know that. Vacations can kill a diet because you're going out to eat more and you're going to be with family or other people more and doing things. Holidays. Let me tell you this. Christmas and Thanksgiving, that's most of the reason why people say, let's lose weight. Why? Because you just gained the 10 pounds over Thanksgiving and Christmas. So holidays. How about weather? I don't know about you, but weather, when it's cold out, I want to do, number one, I want to put a coat on, and number two is I want to eat, and not necessarily in that order. And so eating is something that can be affected by weather. Work is that way. If you're busy at work or sedentary, that can affect. So when you think about achievement resolutions, the problem is they're short-lived, and you can't always control the circumstances that affect them. Now, there's a reason, again, we're talking about that. I think you'll understand in a moment. There's a second type of resolution, and that's called a process resolution. A process resolution is changes in our lifestyle that brings about change over a long period of time, long term. Most people tell you if you want to lose weight, you don't just simply try to not eat anything for 3 days. The best thing you do is you change lifestyle, change, you know, what you eat and when you eat and things like that. Now, here's the thing about process resolutions, okay? I'm going to change. I'm not going to simply try to lose 10 pounds. I'm going to make some long-term changes in my life. Now, here's a problem with that. It takes much longer. But the good side is this. The change is usually much more permanent. Now, anyone who's lost weight will tell you that the goal of weight loss is not simply losing weight. Seems antithetical, but it's true. You're not simply just trying to lose weight. What you're trying to do is you're trying to keep the weight off. Anyone can, I say anyone, most likely most people can lose weight if you just say, okay, for now I'm not going to eat anything until for 3 days. Would you lose weight? Sure you would. Well, what would happen after the 3 days? And you pig out. You gain it all back. So that does no good. It does no good simply to put weight off. You want to do is you keep it off. I know you're saying, I came to church for a Bible study, not a weight loss clinic. Okay, we're using this to springboard. Just stay with me, okay? I think you'll see the connection. If not, blame Doug. Now, the idea of process is this, that you're not simply trying to lose 10 pounds. You say, you know what, I'm going to change what I eat. I'm going to change when I eat. I'm going to change maybe how I eat. And eventually, these changes will lead to less weight. Eventually. Maybe not quickly. It may take me a whole year to knock off some pounds. But what happened is the pounds go off and they stay off. And so the long process is a longer change, but it's a more long-term change. Now, my wife and I talking about this recently, and I saw some pictures last night. I was going through something and saw some old pictures when me and Becker and our daughters went down to Mexico to visit the Yaders. And I looked at myself about 4 years ago, I guess it was three, four years ago, and I said, boy, I was fat. I mean, I was pushing 200 pounds. That's like 30, 40 pounds more than I weigh right now. And I had a double chin, I had a belly that's hanging over, and I said, wow. Now, I didn't think I was that fat until you look at those pictures. Now, you say, how did you lose that weight? It wasn't simply I quit eating. Let me tell you how I lost weight. Here's the key. All I did was this. I had a spreadsheet. I'll pretend I'm writing, even though I was typing in. And all I did is, every day, I wrote down what I ate and how many calories it was and kept total. And I realized, first thing, I was eating a whole lot more than I thought I was eating. Second of all I did is make gradual changes over a long period of time, and then the weight just started coming off. I did some other things on the side, but the main thing was I kept track. Let me tell you what this spreadsheet looks like. Here's what my weight looked like over that period of time. Ding, 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 ding. It's just like a ping pong ball. It just bounced everywhere. Sometimes, like I'd have one day, I lost 2 pounds. Yes! The next day, I look on the scale and I'm going to throw it. How could I gain 3 pounds? I just lost 2 pounds. I hate scales. Now I step on the next day. Hey, I lost it again. Boy, everything's all right again. And so but watch this. I also did a running average. I did all kinds of graphs trying to encourage myself. I did a running average, and the average looked like this. It just gradually kept going down over a long period of time. And really, when we think of the Christian life, now get ready, we're coming around the curve, and we're going to get to the spiritual truth. When we come to the Christian life, it is process that is more important than achievement. You see, the problem with achievement is it may be accomplished, but then you go right back. You do it, and then you go back. And you lose weight, and you go back and gain weight. And you lose weight, and you gain weight. You say, I had an achievement. I lost 10 pounds, but I gained 15. But I had another achievement. I lost 7, but I gained back 5. And so it's back and forth and up and down. Process is that long-term change that is more, maybe take longer, maybe more gradual, but it's more permanent. And that's really what you want to see in your Christian life. You don't want to be the Christian that, oh, today I read my Bible, and then 3 weeks later, okay, I read my Bible again. You want to be the one who's consistent, who's just doing it again. It may not be, you may not be the one who's getting all the credit. You may not be the one who's getting all the praise, but you're just the consistent, plodding Christian, and over time you're learning the Bible, over time you're growing as a Christian, over time there's gradual change in your life. It may not be day and night. It may not be you walk in one day and you're 200 pounds, and next day you walk in and you're 160 pounds, you're like, wow, one day you lost 40 pounds. Okay, that's not you. But maybe it might take you 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, but you're gradually changing, gradually growing. That type of process is what the Christian life is about. So here's the spiritual truth. Ready? Taking a big turn. Get ready. Now we're going in a different direction. The Christian life is not made up of individual acts of obedience, but rather a lifestyle of surrender. Now, if you get nothing else out of the Bible story, that is an important truth to understand. The problem we have in our Christian life is this. All we do is look for, well, I did this. Okay, well, I did that. and I did this. You know what the Lord is looking for? This heart right here. You can't buffalo God. You can't simply say, well, Lord, look what I did here, because the Lord knows you did it maybe out of pride, or you did it just for something you could get out of it. The Lord is looking for a heart that is surrendered to Him. Not just an achievement here or an achievement there. He's looking for a long-term surrender of your heart to Him. We don't measure our Christian life by simply achievements, but rather by life long-term that honors the Lord. Let me give you an example of what I mean. We handed out Sunday some Bible reading calendars. You can go online. There's all kinds. You know, it's nice to have internet and just Google Bible reading calendar. You can get a whole plethora of different ways. You can read the Bible alphabetically. You can read the Bible chronologically. You can read the Bible forward, backwards. Any way you want to think of, there's a Bible reading calendar. You can do it in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You can do it all kinds of different ways. But watch this. But it's not simply enough to read the Bible. God is not impressed because you just read the Bible. God wants you to live the Bible. You see, if all I do is say, okay, here's my Bible reading, and I'm all for, okay, we handed out Bible reading calendars. I encourage you to read the Bible through this coming year. I'm all for that. And we hand out the Baptist bread, which has Bible reading in it. I'm all for that. But if all you do is this, okay, I read 3 chapters, 4 chapters, wherever the Bible, okay, checked off, but you do nothing with it. You're not learning. You're not trying to say, okay, what should I do based on the Bible? What should I stop based on the Bible? How should that affect my life? How should that change the way I think? How should that change my attitude towards people or towards the Lord? If there is no life change, then that achievement means nothing. It's not enough simply to check off something. We need to be putting things in practice that there's a long-term change in our life. Achieving my daily reading does not negate my responsibility in living the Bible over a long period of time. So, you say this. Well, Pastor White, are you saying it doesn't matter if I read the Bible? That's not what I'm saying. Okay, how can you live a book you never read? It can't happen. But if all you do is read it and never live it, there is no blessing in that. The purpose of reading the Bible is so that I know how to live. But if I'm not living it, then there's no achievement simply in just reading it. So I can have an achievement. I can go through all next year. I can, at this time next year, I can look at my Bible reading calendar, have every box checked off and say, look, I read my Bible through. But if it didn't change any how you live, there is no really blessing to that. So it's the process that we're looking at. Yes, the achievement is important, but it's important because the big picture is the process that we're trying to be involved in. This long-term, permanent, maybe even gradual change that the Lord wants to do in our life. And so the Christian life cannot simply be a series of boxes that we check. It has to be a heart that is surrendered. Now, when we come to New Year's resolutions, we have to consider processes to put in place in our life, not just achievements we want to reach. Now, if this process we're talking about, okay, is a life that honors God, then I have to say, okay, what achievements do I need to do within that process, but only so it helps me to achieve that process? Because the process is what I want. I want long term. I want my heart to be surrendered. I want to look and say my life is honoring to the Lord, glorifying the Lord, bringing praise to the Lord, not simply because I did this, but my heart wasn't right with them. Now that brings us back to the book of Job. Here's something, as you consider the book of Job, it is I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's a strange book. I mean, you start out in Job chapter 1, it's interesting. Job chapter 2 is interesting. Job chapter 3, it takes a left turn. Look at Job chapter 3 with me. Look at verse 1. After this, because, you know, he has his friends who show up, his three friends show up, and who are such an encouragement to him that, you know, they look at verse 13 of chapter 2. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him. Real great encouragement there. What happens after their encouragement of just sitting there kind of sorrowing with them? After this, Job opened his mouth, chapter 3, verse 1, and cursed his day. It doesn't seem like they're helping him much. And from Job 3, 1, all the way until you get to Job 39 or something like that, where God speaks up. Up until then, all there is, maybe it's 37, is it? Nope, 38, I think. Yep, 38. And so all the way from Job 3 to Job through Job 37, there's just this discourse going back and forth. And so you read the book of Job, he says this, and Job says that, and this friend says this, and Job says that. And all it is talking. Job 1, action. Job 2, action. Job 3, all the way through the end of 37, they're just going blah, 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 blah. And then finally, like, God says, okay, enough. Job, answer me this. And Job says, there, God. And then when he's done, Job says, I rent my mantle, I repent in sackcloth, dust and sackcloth, and he just says, okay, Lord, you're right, I can't answer you. And then God blesses Job, and he has twice as much as he started with. So it's really strange, because 1 and 2 is action-packed. You get to the end of Job, and everything is like, boom! Now he has twice as much as he started with. But most of Job, all they are talking back and forth. In fact, if I asked you this, what actions did Job do? You'd say, talked? I don't know. He talked. Job is about Job and his friends talking back and forth. Doesn't really talk a whole lot about what they did, other than they sat there and talked for all these chapters. So there's got to be something about Job more than simply he checked off a few boxes. Job is known more, now follow me here, Job is known more by his lifestyle that honored the Lord than simply an action that he took. And we can say some things he didn't do. Yeah, that's true. In chapter 1 and chapter 2, you can point out a few things. But the vast majority of the book of Job doesn't really talk about anything they did other than talking. So that brings us back to chapter number 2. There's something here, I think, that kind of jumps out at us, helps us to know something about the process, something about going on in Job's life long term that made the difference. Okay, chapter 2, look with me in verse number 3. You already know where I'm going because I already told you, spoiled it to start with. Look at verse 3. And the Lord said to Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" Now look at verse 3. "And still he holdeth fast his integrity." He's talking about, okay, Satan, you've taken all of his possessions away. He was the richest man. Now he has nothing. All of his kids are gone. All of his wealth is gone. All of his possessions are gone. But he says in verse 3, but he still retains his integrity. He still holdeth fast his integrity. And we see that in verse 9. His wife says the same thing. "Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thy integrity?" Now, look with me in chapter 27 of Job, in verse 5. Because it's mentioned again. Now, again, we're jumping in the middle of conversations. But just so you see it, in chapter 27, look at verse 5. "God forbid that I should justify you till I die." Now, there's kind of a... he's talking to this fellow. "Till I die, I will not remove my integrity from me." In other words, he's saying, I'm going to hold on to my integrity. I'm not going to give it up. This is something very important to me. I will not remove my integrity from me. Now, look with me in chapter 31. Look at verse 6. These are pretty bold words by Job. "Let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know my integrity." Now, the problem was they were saying, "Job, you're wicked. Job, you've done wrong. Job, obviously something's going on. No one knows about this. This is why it's happening to you. You must be a bad guy because bad things have happened to you." And Job's answer is, "I have not done. I don't know of any sin I've committed that would cause this. I don't know of anything. I'm not leading a double life." And he again repeats that here and says, "You know, let me be waiting." In other words, let the Lord check it out. I'm not hiding anything. Then he says that God may know my integrity. So this idea of integrity is that process we're talking about. Now, here's the next. Ready? We're getting ready to spin again and get to some application. Integrity is not an achievement. It's not like you check off, I have integrity, I'm done. Integrity is a lifetime process. You don't just have integrity because you did one good thing. In fact, you can do one good thing and people still don't think you have integrity. They're looking for a life lived that shows integrity. How are you when things are up? How are you when things are down? How are you when people talk good about you? How are you when people talk bad about you? How are you when you're short of money? How are you when you have an abundance of money? How are you when no one knows what's going on? Do you do some things you shouldn't be doing? Integrity is a life. It's a way of life or a process of living. Now, with that thought in mind, here is, we get to the application. Okay? Losing weight may be the most popular resolution, according to everything that's said. But the better resolution is to live 2015 a life of integrity. Let me just ask you this, point blank. What would happen if every born-again believer was someone who had integrity? I tell you this, and there was a teacher in our college, and he said it. He was being cynical, but there's some truth to it. I appreciate Christians. And we mentioned Brother Myers. He has his own business, and he has a good reputation. I appreciate that. He's a born-again believer, and people, you know, he's honest with people. Even people who aren't saved, I speak well of them. Okay, like Joe Goforth. People who aren't even saved, speak well of them. Okay? I'm just seeing if you're paying attention back there. But, you know, here's the other side of it. There's sometimes when someone has that fish, you know what I'm talking about, that fish symbol supposed to mean they're a Christian? You want to go the other way. Because the truth is, if anyone will cheat you, it'll be that guy. Because, you know, I'll do you a deal, brother. I'll take good care of you. You'll take me to the cleaners is what you'll do. I'm not one to raise your hand, but truth is, I bet you know people who claim to be Christians. You wouldn't trust for anything. Because you know they have no integrity. And one of the hurtful things we have in our nation, one of the reasons that people look down upon Christians, they look down upon churches, is not because they hate God, it's because they know people who call themselves Christians. We have heard our own cause. We have heard our own name. And so this idea of integrity, I think, is important in the Christian life. And I think a better resolution is saying, you know what, in 2015, I'm going to be a believer in Jesus Christ who's known by my integrity. Now, what kind of process, when you think about integrity, what kind of process, what kind of way of life does it look like? Now, we're going to go back to the book of Job. I'm just going to point out some things, I think, that we see in Job's life, that we see his integrity. It didn't just happen overnight, but we see this process going on and these decisions he made that show that he was a man have integrity. So what does this process, this way of life look like? I'll show you three things tonight. Ready? By way of application. Number one is this. This life of integrity, a life that has the proper values. Here's what I mean by it. Go with me to Job 2, look in verse 4. And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thy hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he, Job, will curse thee to thy face. You know why Satan said that? Because I think Satan believed it. You know why he believed it? Because he knows many people call themselves Christians exactly what they would do. Boy, my bills are paid. I'm healthy. My kids are good. Everything is fine. Boy, praise God. But all of a sudden, when everything turns upside down, and now you're hurting some area of your life, or maybe many areas of your life, all of a sudden you're questioning God, you're cursing God, you may be denying God, you're mad at God, and Satan knows exactly that's how many who claim to be believers act. I think Satan is a good student of human behavior. Now, when we think about this idea of integrity and this idea of proper values, here's, I think, what we learn from Job. Integrity is valuing the Lord more than my own life. In other words, the Lord's more important than my friends, my Lord's more important than my finances, and He's more important than my feelings. Those are probably the three things that offend people. They have friends who pull them the wrong way, or maybe their finances go in the toilet, and all of a sudden now, you know, they're freaking out because, oh, I can't, what am I going to do? Boy, let me just stop and say this. Your budget doesn't change who God is. Okay, God is God. It doesn't matter whether you can pay your bills or not. Sometimes it's the Lord's will, and sometimes it's your own foolishness. I'm not trying to be unkind. I mean, every person who's gone belly up financially isn't because God hates them. Maybe just because you're a knucklehead. Sometimes God puts you in situations, and He does put you in a situation and your finances do go in the tank. There's different reasons for it, but regardless of why it happens, God is still God. He still sits on His throne. We can still trust Him and follow Him. Now, if I were to ask you this evening, went around the room and said, who do you value more? We'll start with Brendan. Brendan, we're not going to, you don't have to answer. I don't want you to disappoint your mom. And so you don't have to answer out loud. But if I said, Brendan, who do you value more? Brendan Goforth or the Lord Jesus Christ? And I went all the way around the room, came all the way through every single person, came all the way through the vast thousand people out here, in case you're listening on the internet, and for the vast thousand people in our congregation tonight, and came all the way over here to Sarah Vogel. Every person would say the same thing. I value the Lord Jesus Christ more than... But really, do you think every believer really values the Lord the most? I think in our hearts we want that to be true, but I'm not sure if that's true for every believer. How would I know whether I value the Lord more than my own life? Well, I think there's a way. Here's what you do. Two things you want to look at. Look at your budget. Look at your schedule. Just look at it. And whatever gets priority in those two things, that's what you value. You don't have to guess. Where's your money going? That's what you value. Where's your time going? That's what you value. That's how we be honest with ourselves. Not just say something, but be honest with ourselves. I have more to say, but Doug prayed way too long, so I got to hurry up. Number two, ready? So number one is this, a life that has the proper values. That's a life of integrity. If I'm going to be a believer who is known for my integrity, then I'm going to have to value the Lord more than anything else. I'm going to have to. And there's going to come times when I'm going to have to make a decision, say, no, you know, you're my friend, I love you, I'd do anything for you, except go contrary to my Lord, because I love my Lord more than anyone. Sometimes it's hard for families to understand that. You love the Lord more than you love your family. And they say, well, we're flesh and blood. Yeah, but He's my Savior. And you have to value Him more. That's integrity. I put the Lord above all things. My job, everything. The Lord gets first place in my life. Okay, that's a life of integrity. We see that in Job. Because Satan didn't think it would be true, but as you read the book of Job, you find out it is true. He did not curse God to His face. He did value the Lord more than his own life. Even when his own life was full of sores and boils, he still valued the Lord more. Here's the second thing I want you to understand. Not only is it a life that has the proper values, but number two is this. It's a life that has proper commitment. I hasten because I want to get to this, because I think this will help us here. Go with me to Job 2. Look with me in verse 7. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot into his crown, all the way from foot to the head. And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Now what's going to happen next? It's a good question. Satan said he would curse God to his face. That's what Satan said. What happens next? Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thy integrity? In other words, he's not cursing God. Curse God and die. Get it over with. Come on. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one the foolish woman speaketh. Now look at his answer. What? Now listen. Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In other words, let me put it in this way. He's saying, you know what? It's not about what I get. If I get good things from the Lord, thank God. If I don't get good things from the Lord, so be it. I'm committed to Him. I'm not committed to my wealth. I'm not committed that God's blessing me. I'm not committed that things are going my way. I'm committed to the Lord. That's my commitment. Now I want you to listen to this statement. What Job was saying is that God was his... Now, slow down, because I want you to get this. What Job was saying is this, that God was his focus, not a particular outcome. Now, the reason we got in this long harangue about achievement versus process, because achievement Christianity is how most of us are. We want to achieve something, because that feeds our pride. It makes us feel good. It takes a long time to put in the right processes in the Christian life. A long learning to read your Bible every day, just learning to read it every day, learning to pray every day, learning to witness on a regular basis, learning to be in church faithfully, service after service. It takes time to do that. It takes time to establish those things in your life. It's much easier just to check off something and say, okay, I'm done. I can go do what I want now. We are geared, because of our sin nature, because of our humanity, we're geared towards achievement Christianity. And achievement in itself is not bad. I'm just saying that, apart from process, is what gets us in trouble. But here's the danger. We end up, I want you to get this, okay? We make God a means to reach that achievement. Instead of saying, God is not the way I get what I want, God is what I want. Let me tell you, those are two different statements. Most of us, when I say us, I'm not going to be just Grace Baptist, I'm about people who claim to be independent, fundamental Baptist, Bible-believing, King James, soul-winning, whatever. You know, all the adjectives, separated, soul-winning, sanctified, sweet, sour, whatever. Whatever the S, I can't think of any more S words. However we describe ourselves, if you put that as a group, there's a vast majority, there's a large number. I shouldn't paint too wide of a brush. There's a large number that simply want God as a way to get what they want. They really don't want the Lord. They want something, and God is a means to it. Now, I believe in tithing. I don't know. I guess you understand that. I believe in tithing. But it's not like, I'm not tithing like the lottery. I'm not saying I give God 10% because He's going to abundantly give me more. My 10% is going to be 20%. So it's like playing the lottery, but a guaranteed win that I give God $100 and I'm guaranteed to get more than $100 back. I don't know how true that is, but I know this. Let me tell you what happens when I put money in the plate. I have less money in the bank. That's the end result of it. Now, I'm sure God in other ways blesses me and multiplies it in different ways, but as far as looking at my bank account itself, okay, that just look at my bank account. When I write a check out for whatever, okay, that much money minus, okay, my account drops down, and it stays down until I say, I better put some more money in there. Well, the Lord isn't doing it, so I better go put some more money in there and build it back up. And then it drops down again. Okay? So God is not a means for me to get a big bank account. But I love Him, so I want to obey Him. I want to give to Him. I want to be obedient in that area. Here's what happens to achievement Christianity. I guarantee you know someone this way. They used God as a means. They heard preaching, and they said, well, if you do this, God will do that. And so all they did is they said, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. I'm checking off in case you don't know. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and then this, and this again. Ready? See that? And it didn't happen. And here's what they did. I give up. God doesn't care about me. I did all these things, and where are you at? And what God is saying is, but it was never in here. See? I played the flute. I played the trumpet. I played the drums. You didn't dance. And God said, that's not the idea. I didn't hire you to be my band so I could dance to your tune. God said, I saved you and I called you to myself and I give you some things to do because there's supposed to be a love relationship between us and there's this abiding together. This isn't you using me to get what you want. That's not the idea of being saved. See, God is not our end. Sorry, God is not a means to our end. God is the end. He's the whole focus, the whole purpose, the whole goal. God Himself is who we seek, not a means to get what we want. Now, how does that apply to integrity? You're wondering that, aren't you? Let's apply it to integrity. Ready? Now, for some, this is, maybe not you, but for some people, this is just a 2x4 side to head. One of the biggest hindrances to integrity is when a believer manipulates people and events in order to achieve his own desired outcome. You know any Christians like that? They're always manipulating things. Now, here's what they'd say, but I have a good, my heart is good. I have a good outcome. I want something good to come out of it. Let me be clear about this. You never have a right to manipulate people. You have never have a right to manipulate events. Well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to tell this person this, and this person this, and this person this, even though it's really not okay. Maybe I'm a little not being honest. But, you know, if I got to tell Janet this, so I can get Janet to do something in the ministry. And I got to tell Bethany this, so I can get Bethany to do something in the ministry. And I got to tell Doug this, so I can get Doug. Why not just be honest and let the Lord work in people's hearts? It's not your job to manipulate. You say, but wait a minute, the end result is going to be a good thing. It is not your job to make things turn out good. You know, there's a verse in the Bible, Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for good. Who's doing the working? Not me. He is. It is God's job to make things work out for good. It's my job to surrender. It's my job to follow. It's my job to do. The outcome is not my responsibility. My responsibility is obedience. The outcome, well, what happens? Maybe this ministry doesn't grow, or maybe this person doesn't come to church, or maybe... Okay, I can't control those. I have one area of controlling. Me surrendering and following the Lord. That's why we talk about this process, integrity. Our hearts are following Him. We're not trying to manipulate. We're not trying to achieve some thing that we can check off so that we feel better. We're trying to seek out the Lord in our life. Here's the thing, important thing to understand about integrity. Integrity is like a compass. It's an important concept. Years ago, when I was a kid in West Virginia, during the summer, not too often in the winter. In the winter, we'd always find some hill to go down sled riding. But in the summer, we would, especially when school's out, we would get up in the morning. Sometimes we'd be gone for hours. We just took a little can. It's kind of a funny thing about it. We take a couple cans of pork and beans and usually a lighter. And you know, we got hungry. We'd take a couple spoons. We'd start a little fire and heat them up and eat them. What do you do with the cans? Don't ask. And so we just move on, and we'd walk hours sometimes. We're going to go this way today. Well, after a couple hours walking, we said, you know, those beans, they just didn't really feel me. So I think I'm going to go home. Now, you're down in the valley. Where's home? I don't know. It's not here. It's there somewhere. So we would just say, let's go top of that hill. So we go on top of that hill, and we look around. And there's several landmarks that would always point us the way home. Several things we could see and say, okay, if that's there, then home's there. Or if that's there, then home must be over there. That's kind of what integrity is. Integrity is when you look around and say, you know, I don't really know what to do. Integrity says, you know what, I'm going to do right. I'm just going to do right. People have asked, well, what are you going to do? Here's my answer sometimes. I don't really know what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to figure out what the right thing is, and that's what I'm going to do. Whatever the right thing is, that's what I want to do. I want you to notice this verse with me. Go with me to Proverbs 11. You're in Job. Just a couple places to your right. Proverbs 11. Here's a good verse for us. Now, this is what I'm committed to. I'm committed to the Lord. I'm not committed to my own agenda. I'm not committed to what I want. I'm committed to the Lord. I'm going to retain my integrity. We'll get to that thought here in a moment. Proverbs 11, look down with me to verse number 3. Notice what it says here. The integrity of the upright shall, what's the last two words? Guide them. That's what we're talking about. That's a guide. Integrity. It's a guide to us, a compass to us. It always points, if you will, true north. It always points us the right way if we just say, okay, Lord, I'm going to do right. Now, question becomes this. How do we determine if we're making our decisions based on integrity? What if I am trying to manipulate? What if I am trying to try to arrange things for my own end? How do I know I'm really having integrity? Here's what I've learned to do. I'm not perfect at it, but I would encourage you, somewhere along this line, this is, I think, a good way to look at it. Here's what I've learned to ask myself. Okay? Something comes up in my life, and I'm thinking, this would be a good outcome, this would be a bad outcome. But that's not the question. The question is what's right. Not the outcome. The question is what's right. So I'm going to tell you, I'm always tempted to choose the good outcome. Isn't that amazing? I can always rationalize this decision to go this way, but doesn't make it the right way. So here's what I have to ask myself. If I had no dog in the fight, if the decision didn't affect me at all, didn't affect my money, didn't affect my family, didn't affect me personally, didn't affect any friends, it had no effect on me, what would be the right decision? That's when I start realizing that would be the right decision, wouldn't it? Yep, it sure would. That's not the I don't want that, but that's the right one. That's what I need to do. because that's the right thing. That's how you look at integrity. Not how it affects me, not how it achieves what I want, not how is it better me, but what is the right thing to do? Or you can put it this way, what would you tell someone else to do? You know, most of the time, you know what's right. Because if someone came to you and said, here's my decision, you'd say, come on, stupid, this is the right thing. What are you, dumb? But when you're in that situation, you're like, I don't know, I'm so... You do know. Let me tell you why a lot of times we're so frustrated on the decision. Because we can't rationalize it the way we want yet. Most people come to me and say, I got a decision to make. By the time they're done talking, we both know what the right decision is. I don't have to say a word. They already know what it is. What they want is there an out? Is there some way I can do it this way? Nah, that's the right way. And so if you had no dog in a fight, what would be, and that's how you know when you're following integrity, not just your own desires, your own outcome in that thing. Again, we've got to move to the last point. Number three is this. Yeah, you missed that point, didn't you? It guides you through life regardless of the circumstances. That's the blanks you're looking for. I saw that in your eyes. Okay, number three. Ready? Got to get that blink. Got to feel. Don't push that button yet. Okay, you got it now. I know you're a fast writer. Number three is this. You know, it would help if I pushed the buttons instead of just kept talking, right? What would you do? Okay, what would be the right thing to do if it didn't worry about the consequence of the outcome? Sometimes I get caught up in my notes and I forget this little doohickey up here to be pushing. And number three, here we go. Here's the third idea of integrity. It's a life that has the proper steadfastness. We see both in verse 3, where it says in Job, and we just saw those verses a moment ago about holdeth fast. That's what the Lord said. He holdeth fast his integrity. And then in verse 9, his wife says, dost thou still retain thy integrity? Hold fast retains the same word. It's the same Hebrew word. One place it's translated hold fast, another retain. It means the same thing. The idea is standing firm. That's the idea of holding fast, retaining, standing firm. That's the idea of steadfast, stand firm. What it implies is when we say stand firm, what it means, it has the idea that it's not easy. There's some effort taken. It's like when the wind's blowing, you're kind of leaning against the wind to stand where you're at. That's the idea of standing firm. You're making effort to stay where you're at. Okay, that's the idea. It's an effort applied. So when he says to retain or hold fast our integrity, the idea here is it'll take effort or toil or work or sweat, whatever, labor to live a life of integrity. I'm going to try to get through these last points quickly because of time. Let me just give you to a nutshell. Ready? When you think about integrity, living a life of integrity, better resolution, understand this. Always be careful about the easy way out of any circumstance. As a Christian, when you're at work and you're thinking the easy way out of this problem is I tell my boss X. But if X is not the truth, you don't tell your boss that. You have friends who say, you know what? Okay, when I worked at FedEx, I had friends who say, you know, man, I'm gonna be late. When you punch in, can you punch me in too? And then I'll grab just put the card to the side. Should I? Yeah, we all know that. But when you work with that guy every day, that's not an easy answer. It's not because you feel the pressure. You know, you feel that. Come on, it's only 5 minutes, but it's a lie. It's not right. The easy way out is say, no. But that's not right. I have to be steadfast, stand firm and say, no, I'm going to do right no matter how difficult. I'm planting my feet here. I'm standing firm. This is what's right. And even though I'm being pushed, I'm going to stay here because this is the right spot. I'm steadfast in this thing. Now, I want you to notice this. It doesn't have to be hard. Okay, I don't want you to think, well, whatever's hard must be the right way. That's not always true. I seem to violate that a lot of times, but that's not always true. Okay, it may not always be hard to do right. That is true. But listen, it's never always going to be easy. If your life is always the easy path, let me just tell you, you're not a person of integrity. If you're always taking the easy path, you're not a person of integrity. Because you've got to be doing things that aren't right. Because doing right is not always easy. It may be easy at times, but it's not always easy. Doing right will involve doing the hard thing. Doing the hard thing. That's really a sign of your integrity. Doing the hard thing. Let me make one statement. I'll show you the last point and we'll be done. If you've lived for the Lord for a while and you've tried to do right, you're going to relate to this. Some people think that those of us who live for Jesus, we do this because it's easy. They say, well, the reason you live for Jesus is because you have an easier life. You don't have my problems. You don't have my difficulties. You don't have what I'm going through. And so it's easy for you to do that, living for Jesus, but I can never do that. And what you want to say is this, buddy, you don't know how hard it is for me at times. Your life is the easy life. I got a whole lot more problems than you. We don't do this because it's easy. We don't live for Jesus because it's easy. Truth is, we do this in spite of the difficulty. We do this because we want to be people of integrity. Not because it's easy, not because it is no conflict, because it's right. And despite how hard it is, we want to do right. Because we want to be people of integrity. Now, I got more to say, but we're done in time. So here's the last statement. We have to stay true to this process of living by integrity. It's a long time. And allow God to use it to develop a life that honors Him. A testimony is built over a long period of time. Staying faithful to the Lord, letting Him use you. And integrity is a very important part of that testimony for Jesus Christ.